set those.
You are listening to Running on Air, produced at KVU Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. I'm your host, Althea Billings. Running on Air is a daily radio roundtable conversation with the people running to represent Portland. In this episode, we're talking with candidates from District 4. We want you to join the conversation. Please call into the air room with questions for our candidates at 503-231-8187. You can message us a question on the website. That's kbu.fm. Click on the chat with us button. You can also email us your questions to runningonair@kbu.org. Let's meet our candidates for the day. I have in the studio with me Mike DiNapoli and Eric Zimmerman. Welcome to Running on Air.
Hi there. How are you?
Good, good. Welcome.
Thank you.
Appreciate you both taking the time to talk to our listeners, and I want to get to know you both a bit better. Starting here, why did you decide to run for city council? What inspired this? You've been on an odyssey, some would say, with everything that's going on.
Yeah, I'll jump in. You know, for me, I've had a desire for a long time to be more civically engaged, but I really firmly believe that if you aren't happy with the political landscape that's around us, we have to act locally and get involved locally. So at a city, municipal level, that's where we start building change that affects our communities.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mike. And Eric, what about you?
You know, I think that Portland over the last several years has had a pretty tidal shift in a way that a lot of Portlanders are pretty upset about, me included. I think that we, over the last 2 years, have at least pointed the city in the right direction, but the work to clean up the city, the work to kind of restore the faith of our residents in what the city can achieve still demands work from elected officials, from city workers. And ultimately, you know, I was born in Portland. My entire life has really been around Portland. Every time I've been somewhere else for work, I always come home here. And so the future for Portland, to me, it's very personal, and I think that's a good reason to get into a race.
Yeah. Well, you're both running. Oh, go ahead. Did you want to say something, Mike? Okay. Well, you are both running in District 4, which covers the whole west side of Portland, plus Selwood-Moreland. What do you see as some of the most pressing issues for this district? Eric, do you want to start?
Sure. I think, I think our district concerns are very similar to what a lot of Portlanders across all districts, homelessness, camping, and public safety are front of mind for almost every Portlander this election. That's what we know. How we want to tackle those issues is where some differences exist. But, you know, for District 4, it includes downtown. And anybody who's been paying attention knows that downtown has gone through a tremendous influx of open-air drug use, of just kind of rampant bad behavior, if you will, as businesses and others left. And so we've been really trying to revive downtown. You know, we had open air drug markets like the 4th and Washington location that I helped close down. And those kind of things are very front of mind. The other thing about District 4 is that not all neighborhoods understand this, but District 4, since we're the most urban district, we're the district that has a lot of parks that families don't go to anymore, right? The kind of things that go on in our parks are not the kind of things you would take your kids to. So we're very much aware of that. And then, my district has both some of the wealthiest census tracts and also some of the most impoverished census tracts. And so we've got some disparities between and shared interests between that I think is very front of mind in how we make sure we represent every part of the district. You know, it's easy to talk about this district as just the west side, but Eastmoreland, Westmoreland, Selwood are a huge part of the district. They represent a ton of folks who are also dealing with cleanliness, public safety issues, and overall livability. And so that's front of mind for our voters.
Yeah. Mike, what do you think? District 4 issues.
I definitely agree with a lot of what Eric is saying there. And I do, you know, we hear it across the board, and I think everyone's seeing it, that homelessness and public safety are critical things that need to be addressed and improved in Portland. But I think those two items are also a trifecta that includes affordability. Over the past handful of years, we've seen Portland continue to become an expensive city that's driving out working class people. And the more we do that, the further this problem's going to get. But, you know, the homelessness and the open illicit drug use on our street is really a product of, in my opinion, what we have is an organized crime situation that's allowing unfettered and unchecked fentanyl and other illicit drugs to continue to poison the people of Portland. And until we can really attack that with a full press of a task force, we're just going to keep putting good money after bad to keep, you know, triaging a problem that we're not really fixing. And this isn't unique to Portland. This is affecting cities all across the United States, and fentanyl is really hurting our city. So it's a big issue that also ties to public safety, homelessness, and affordability.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to come back to those issues in a minute, but to get to know you both a little bit more, Mike, you're a small business owner and a contractor. Mm-hmm. You know, in that day-to-day work, are there aspects of it that you think will apply to being on city council?
Oh, for sure. You know, I'm in the live events business and, you know, the building trade. So, you know, my entire career has been about troubleshooting, problem solving, in order to build and amplify other people's projects. And I think these are the skills that are necessary for folks who are elected to public office to come at it with an approach of, we have to continue problem solving and finding solutions for the greater good of what this in front of us is at hand. In this case, it's community building and democracy building. In the small business and the production world, it might be a show or an event or a conference. But I think that the characteristics are similar, and that's what we need to be doing, is problem solving for the people.
Mm-hmm. Well, Eric, you have made a career in government. You're currently the chief of staff for Multnomah County Commissioner Julia Brim Edwards. You've been the deputy city manager in Tigard. You were Mayor Wheeler's central city advisor for a time. From your perspective, I mean, you've seen it a lot from that experience. What are the roadblocks for our community getting things done? You've been on the inside.
Certainly. And I think that the biggest roadblock, and I think we've collectively overcome it, was our old form of government. Mm-hmm. Right, five fiefdoms is how our city was set up, which meant five groups had to negotiate whether or not they would work together. One of the experiences as a deputy city manager in a couple of cities in Oregon that really helps me frame up my opinion about that is that as a deputy city manager, departments all worked for me, right? One executive, and then to the city manager as well. And so that pyramid of effort is how almost every city in America gets stuff done. Portland, for a long time, has decided that that didn't work for us. And so we have overcome that. That's really
great. We like to be weird.
We have lived with capital weird, yeah, on that situation. But I think it's really important because the city council is entrusted to make decisions that meet the needs of the public. And in the cities where I've been a deputy city manager, what I know is that when city council took an abrupt or a serious change of course, those were okay. And the way that we tackled that challenge as departments and as senior managers is that the very next day we brought together every department. So when you go to tackle something like public safety, I think everybody would say you cannot tackle public safety with police alone. You've got to tackle it with other complementary services, even if police are maybe the lead. That's very hard in our system today. I think that we're moving into a system where we will see that. We'll have a city manager and a mayor who are leading all the departments and who are able to accomplish everything collectively, where streets, parks, public safety, rangers are all complementary to one another, no matter what the topic is. And that is very, very important for every city in America. And Portland's going to finally get that in January.
Rowing in the same direction, I feel like, is one of the idioms I've heard.
I think I have that on my website.
Okay, nice. Yes. Maybe that's where I heard it from.
There you go.
Well, let's move over to community safety here. Mike, you support creating a community response team to tackle neighborhood and property crimes. And Eric, you've supported expanding Portland Police's neighborhood response teams. Can we talk about these different strategies? Like, what would that look like, and why do you think they're important? Mike, do you want to start?
Sure. Portland Police Bureau does have the Behavioral Health Unit, which in the past has been very effective and a very compassionate way to deal with people in crisis. Again, the issues that we're facing have exploded into a massive issue. So all agencies and all forces are tapped as we continue to push forward. But we need a task force that's state, local, and even federal, to continue to, again, come back and deal with the organized crime that's allowing the free flow of illicit drugs. But, you know, I think it's also important to put onus back on the community, because police are important, but police don't stop crime. They deal with crime. They respond to crimes. It's really a vibrant and healthy community working together that helps prevent crime. And a lot of that is looking out for one another and making sure that we have a structure for community members to, you know, when they call in something that they notice that's going on that needs attention and it gets ignored, people are just, they stop calling and reporting things because there's no accountability. So we need a structure that enables our community members to be a part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. And what does that look like exactly?
You know, I have some ideas, but I really don't know exactly.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's something that is a bigger discussion that has to include the police department, but needs to include the community, because it may be different for every neighborhood and what resources they need. We have neighborhood watches that have been helpful, but they're only as helpful as the community is engaged to support it. So I think it's a continued outreach to encourage community members to be involved in the solutions that we're driving toward.
Mm-hmm. And Eric, the Portland Police Neighborhood Response Teams.
Yeah, I think, so not everybody knows about neighborhood response teams, but I think a lot of people have probably interacted and not realized that that was a neighborhood response team. So we have, of course, the officers who take 911 calls. Those are our patrol officers. And while we have a lot of challenging in increasing those ranks as well so that we can respond quickly to emergencies, we also have an important team in each precinct called the Neighborhood Response Team. And these are officers who work day in and day out, but they are not taking the typical 911 calls. So they're not just going from one crisis to the next. Most Portlanders have heard of the term, at least, of community policing.
Mm-hmm.
Our version of that, in a lot of ways, is the Neighborhood Response Team model. And so I've worked with the Neighborhood Response Teams when I was working with the neighborhoods in the central city. And they are the teams that are able to deal with the most entrenched issues that are affecting a neighborhood, criminal in nature, but not emergencies in nature. And so when you think about that, our prolific graffiti issues, our chop shops, where you, if you go by a homeless camp and you see 35 bicycles, nothing illegal is happening there when it comes to that. When we talk about drug rings, you know, we set up in downtown a couple of holiday seasons ago, I helped set up the retail theft task force. The officers that worked with the neighboring businesses and to get into that work, those are neighborhood response team officers. So I think Portlanders value community policing a lot. I think that these officers, in a lot of ways, are solving the livability issues as they are related to crime that have gone unaddressed for too long in Portland. Each precinct has one neighborhood response team that's about, it's a leadership position with a few officers. I think that as we grow our ranks in police, I'd like to see that double. As we are able to bring another patrol, some of our more experienced officers or officers with deep roots in certain areas are able to step into more of an NRT model. They are a great example where when they need the assistance of another city bureau to get their work done, that it's a very natural connection. So if they need parks to take up an active role in something, if they need PBOT to help them close a particular road, the NRTs are doing that in a planned manner instead of a very responsive manner that I think neighbors are really feeling the benefit from. A couple examples, the Central East Side reset that I led for the city a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The NRT was a presence. In fact, a lot of the residents were even able to get quicker response from those officers who are in the area based on cell phone numbers instead of 911 numbers.
Mm.
And also it helps alleviate the 911 system with calls that are not truly emergency calls. And that's been really helpful. You know, these types of officers are able to unlock, if you're, for instance, I'll give you an example. Our officers, and it's been covered in the media, so I think it's fair to share, they went after a very prolific tagger who was causing tons and tons of damage to places. And when they went after him, and finally stopped him, they found a whole host of other illegal activity that this person was involved with. And that was never going to be a 911 call because graffiti's not really, that's not what that is.
Right.
But they attacked a situation that was having a lot of harm on a neighborhood and then found that actually this person was involved in a whole host of other far more serious crimes as well that I don't know that they ever would have been able to find but for the NRT. So they are having a huge impact across the city. When we talk about community policing, we are generally talking about neighborhood response teams. And for the leadership of the police bureau, these are the teams who can go tackle the really tough stuff that there's no clear answer to.
Mm-hmm. Is it your opinion that, you know, these livability issues that we're talking about, that police should be the primary responder to those?
No. So I think that when you're talking about livability, there's an aspect that's public safety. There's an aspect that is behavioral health. There's an aspect that's related to trash and camping and all those types of things. But what we have seen is that by trying to just rely on Multnomah County to take care of the mental health situation in our community, by not having Portland involved from our bureaus that are able to help, we've fallen flat. And I think that's where we're at for the last several years, is that Multnomah County is clearly not able to take care of all of the behavioral health issues that are existing on our streets, the addiction issues that are happening on our streets. And so it's interrelated. I am a firm believer that none of these get tackled by one entity only, that they do have to be worked on, coordinated. And at the end of the day, there are a whole lot of folks who, the help that they need is actually addictions treatment, mental health treatment, sheltering. It's not the one single criminal act or petty act that occurred. It's the other stuff that's contributing to that. But every now and then we do have a really bad actor and police do have to be part of it. And I actually think Portland has split those duties fairly well. I don't think our neighborhood response teams are overly penalizing folks. I think they're actually seeking out a whole lot of other options like services, shelter, referrals to drug treatment, way more than they are handcuffs in jail.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike, I know you support expanding Portland Street Response as we're talking about alternatives to policing. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, Portland Street Response has been a great addition to our public safety net and response teams, but they aren't fully funded, as many people have come to understand. It needs to be 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 day a year program. When we do see that through, it opens the door for Medicaid federal dollars to be allocated to Portland to help offset and fund the costs of doing the work to help the people on our streets in crisis and see improvement in our city. We know that, you know, a person in crisis doesn't just stop having troubles at 10 o'clock at night. And oftentimes overnight is when these problems are at their worst. So we need to enable Portland Street Response to be able to work 24 hours a day to continue to do that. There are other things that Portland Street Response has that limit their ability to be effective. And so there's some barriers and some changes that we can do to help Portland Street Response be able to help people further. Mm-hmm. They're not allowed to enter private residence. They can't transport people. These are a couple of the challenges that eliminate them from being the right call at the time. But, you know, dispatch at 911, it's now an option for us. If you call 911, you see a person in crisis, there's an emergency at hand, you can call for fire, police, medical, or Portland Street Response. So I want everyone to know that. I think we need to continue to educate people in the community that there are other options, and that's where the community can really help point the right resources to the help that's needed.
Mm-hmm. Well, you are listening to Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Althea Billings. Today, we're speaking with candidates from District 4. I have here with me Eric Zimmerman and Mike DiNapoli. Join our conversation by calling your questions into the air room at 503-231-8187 or by messaging us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm. To get back to the discussion, Eric, where do you land on Portland Street Response and the expansion that a lot of people are really calling for?
Yeah, in fact, last year, over at the county where I work for Commissioner Julie Broom Edwards, we actually had proposed funding in large part the rest of PSR with joint office funding. That wasn't successful. The commission and didn't end up passing that, but I think that signals a direction that I would like to see PSR funding go. I'm glad Mike mentioned transport. I think that on par with where the city expectations, the public's expectations of PSR is that PSR is going to crisis situations, that they are helping de-escalate a situation, and then doing something with the person that they are interacting with. And I think that's a huge misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. Right now, they're not able to transport a person to a better location, a better situation. As far as I'm concerned, it's a gaping hole in our service model. And really want to fix the transport model. And I actually think it is a value proposition for the PSR model to show its worth to everybody involved in the community who has a vested interest in this. And I say that because you may be aware that we've been working on a sobering center at Multnomah County, and the city is a part of that effort as well. We used to have a sobering center in Portland until 2019. A lot of people have referred to it as the drunk tank. It was kind of set up just for alcohol. It closed because when you combined the types of drugs that we have today and alcohol in that same situation, was unsafe for everybody. But what has occurred is we've gone 5 years with no place for people to go that are deeply intoxicated, whether it's drugs or alcohol. And a lot of these same folks also have co-occurring other crises going on. Jail and ERs are the only option besides staying on the sidewalk today, and those are not good options. The Sobering Center plan that's been released by Commissioner Broom Edwards and the work that we were doing includes a transportation model, an in-house transportation model, but we also said PSR is a huge player. If PSR encounters a person on the street who the best option for them is sobering, which we think is actually going to be a number of the people that they interact with, they should be able to transport to a sobering center that will be a safer place where overdose doses will be released, reduced, and where some basic care and monitoring for a person in crisis can occur. So I think that's a future for PSR. I'd like to see that. Where PSR lands in terms of you know, its bureau future and leadership future, I think going over the community safety division has been the right decision, and I'm open to where that goes. But 24/7 transport is a must, and they've got to show a reduction in the 911 system so that they're making an effort, and we're not just sending more cars to the same call all the time, which is how it goes today. Mm-hmm. We need to find that reduction so that we're able to improve the 911 system across the board and improve the interaction for people on the street across the board.
Mm-hmm. The right people going to the right situation.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I want to one more aspect of this that I want to touch on. Recently, Street Roots published extensive reporting that documents that the Portland crime wave that some people have really decried as a big problem is more of a ripple when you look at the numbers. It's just not borne out by the data. With that in mind, where do you think this perception of a lack of safety in Portland, where does that come from? Mm-hmm. Mike, do you want to start?
Yeah, I think a big part of it started during the social justice protests and what happened downtown. It really changed the paradigm and the public perception of Portland. It was a perfect storm of issues that people were facing in Portland. And
do you think that's like from Portlanders themselves, or is that external, like national opinion?
I think that the national opinion was large, but with the work from home revolution, the exodus of people from Portland, it has just exacerbated the problem of the public opinion of Portland. But, you know, kind of coming back to the work that I do professionally in the events world, I have the benefit of working with a lot of out of the state and, you know, regional and national events that spend days and weeks on end here in Portland, and the takeaway from those groups that I hear almost every time is Portland is a beautiful city. There's a lot to offer. Seldom do you hear people who are traveling into Portland talking about, oh man, the crime was so bad, like I never want to come back to the city. But here locally, I hear from people who live here, have been here for 5, 10, 15 years or longer. They think that it's just out of control in a bad way, and we need to help bring back the public opinion of the local people in Portland. Mm-hmm. And some of that is rebuilding downtown and making it a place that people feel invited and want to come back to, because our downtown core is key in making sure that Portland at large is a vibrant and healthy place that people love and want to be in.
Yeah. Do you think we're still in sort of this aftershadow of the pandemic as well?
100%. Yeah. Economically, things are still in the recovering state. Was listening to a director from ORLA, the Oregon Restaurant Lodging Association, Oregon Restaurant and Lodging Association. They think our recovery is still 3 years out from being at the point that we were pre-pandemic. But it's coming. It's building quickly, and Portland's rebounding nicely.
Yeah. Eric, what do you think about this?
So I haven't seen the article you're referencing, so I'll start there. But I am familiar with the disagreement about whether or not we have gone through a crime wave or it's just people kind of overreacting. And what I would say is, having worked to try and start the recovery for downtown and the rest of Central City in late 2022, I'm not going to get into the business of telling a bunch of people who were coming to work every morning and seeing broken glass and other terrible things at their front door that somehow they weren't experiencing some level of crime, right? Mm-hmm. What I think has happened is that what we used to call petty crimes now are happening so frequently to a lot of people, it's hard to say that it's petty when it happens to you once a month, right? Mm. And so break-ins, vandalism, graffiti, kind of the really terrible kind of antisocial behavior and that people experience on the street is something that all kind of goes together, and it leads to a perception. I think that we have years ahead of us to overcome that perception if we're going to send the signal that Portland is cleaner. Portland is not a place where, sorry, I'm going to catch my throat a little bit.
No, you're good. You're good. Go ahead.
Portland is cleaner. Portland is safer in a sense of when you feel that you're on the street, if you come to a show, if you're a suburb person or you're a visitor for a conference, you go to a show, it was a good experience when you left that show and you walked back to your hotel room or walked back to your car and there was only good experiences. I think that helps with this perception. The other piece is, I mean, I think I'll talk about Old Town, and I helped expand and kind of empower the entertainment detail from the Portland Police Bureau that we put in Old Town. And that neighborhood went from one of the most shootings neighborhood to, and because it's one of the economies that really came back, the nighttime economy really came back, but it also became a very dangerous area for a while during those club hours. When we introduced the entertainment detail and we closed those streets to cars and we made it a pedestrian zone for the evening times on the weekends when people were out, club goers were out, that neighborhood went from tons of shootings to no shootings almost overnight. And that was effective there, but we have other parts of the city who are still, I mean, just this week, we have gun violence happening. And I think that maybe we don't all feel that, but there are still families and there are still people going about their business every single day who didn't invite that into their neighborhood, who didn't invite that onto their family members, and we have to take that seriously. So I don't want to blow out, you know, inappropriate, you know, stats or things that are untrue. And I also am not going to be in the business of telling people that we don't really have a crime problem, because what I hear is from folks is they feel that we do. And I think crime is a perception as well as a reality, depending on where you're at.
Very true.
That's important. And I think that it is a very good argument for why you can't approach any one topic with only one type of service, right? Gun violence reduction, the health department's work, the park rangers' work to make sure that gathering spaces are safe, to make sure that Portland Bureau of Transportation's work to make sure that certain streets can be designed better or allow for less quick access out of certain areas. We've seen that work over and over and over. Those types of approaches, whether it's real, perceived, up or down, are making a difference in our highest types of crimes. And the design is helping with some of the what we used to call petty crimes. And I think that's important.
Yeah. Mike, you want to add anything to that?
Yeah. I think, you know, when they closed the arts district downtown in Old Town and they prevent cars from coming through, I think it's important to also acknowledge that that reduction in shootings was also because of the walking patrol that the Portland Police Bureau was doing at the time. That did stop, and some of those shootings started to reoccur, even though the area is still pedestrian only on the weekends. I think that in that Old Town area too, I think it's time is due for us to declare that as a cultural arts district and put the resources behind propping it up as such. And that also includes making sure that the concentration of services to help people aren't all concentrated in Old Town, because mm-hmm. that also adds to some of the challenges that we're dealing with revitalizing that area.
And just real quick, one thing I also wanted to mention was that certainly between 22, 23, and into this year in 24, we have heard from a number of folks who say that they don't call and don't report 911 or other smaller crimes because of a lack of faith that anything will get done. Mm-hmm. And so I think in some sense we're underreported, particularly on our low-level crimes, because we have sent a message that you're not going to get any attention on that. It's not going to get solved. So then why go through the effort? And so I think that we have a perception with our public that we do want to know when you have a problem, because we run on data and on stats. And if there's a surge in an area, we need to know that so that we can put resources there to stop that situation from happening. It's how we attacked problems like open air drug markets, how we attacked it when it moved to a different area, how we get after where, you know, partners like Clean and Safe, who are not a city entity, but they're a business group entity who are able to put their folks in areas and help deter. So the public's faith that the system works contributes to how it's reported as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you both. I appreciate that. Folks at home, you are listening to Running on Air, a production of KBOO Community Radio. I'm your host, Althea Billings. Today, we're speaking with candidates from District 4. That includes the west side of Portland, as well as Selwood-Moreland. I have here with me Mike DiNapoli and Eric Zimmerman. You are more than welcome to join our conversation by calling your questions into the air room at 503-231-8187. You can also message us on the KBOO website. That's kboo.fm. We're going to take a little musical break, and we'll be right back. Support for Running on Air comes from KBOO members and the League of Women Voters. More information about the candidates on your ballot can be found on the League of Women Voters of Portland's website, lwvpdx.org. The League has videos of candidate interviews and forums, as well as links to candidates' written answers to questions and explanations of ballot measures. That's lwvpdx.org. We're back here with Running on Air. Two candidates from District 4, Eric Zimmerman and Mike DiNapoli, in the studio this morning. Give us a call with your questions, 503-231-8187. We would love to hear. I have a question for Mike.
Okay.
You have a plan to reboot the Rose City downtown, and I wanted to hear about what your agenda items were for that type of thing.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I'm always excited to talk about this plan. Three-part plan to reboot the Rose City starts with our phase one idea is to reboot the parking garage, a smart park parking garage at 3rd and Alder. It's a city-owned structure. We still have it. We still have a cost of ownership of maintaining it. Right now, it's completely boarded up, and they did that to consolidate parking services in downtown with fewer people coming. I see this as a tool to reopen it, reboot it, and use it as a tool as 803 parking spaces to incentivize people to return to downtown with free validated parking. So if you come downtown to take in a show, go shopping, enjoy our beautiful city, you shop, you get validated, that that space is there for you. But I also believe that we need to make sure it's one of the safest places to park your car as we can, because you can never guarantee anything. But I want people to be able to park there for free, go shopping, put things in their car, trust that it's going to be there in their car after they go to a movie, a show, or dinner, and spend a whole beautiful day in Portland. So step one, reboot the parking garage at 3rd and Alder and use it as a tool to validate free parking or validated free parking. Step two is to work with our green energy transportation partner, TriMet, and reboot Fairless Rail. So hop on, hop off service from Union Station to Portland State University along 5th and 6th Avenue. And TriMet really wants to boost their ridership goals because they're below ridership levels from pre-pandemic. So they're invested in making sure that at all costs they can boost ridership more so than increased fares. So we can work with them. We can get step one done because we own the building. We can get step two done because our regional partners want that. And then step three is the many empty storefronts along 5th and 6th Avenue become kind of an opportunity district where we can work with owners and property managers to have pop-ups, pop-up retail, pop-up stores, pop-up events, pop-up art, and have them be short-term leases that on city council we can lower the barriers for permitting and occupancy for these artists, doers, and creators to fill those empty spaces, and then use all of these three steps as a tool to really invite people from the suburbs to come in downtown, park your car, and enjoy the city. And all that being said, I'm not advocating for more cars in the city because I do think we need a reduction there, but we need to use the tools that we have at our disposal to invite people back into the city so that they can start to see that we have a lot to offer, and then their love will blossom for the city of Portland.
Their love will blossom. I love that. Eric, what do you think needs to be done for this energizing downtown that needs to be done?
Well, I think the best way for us to energize downtown is that we improve the experience of anybody who goes downtown, whether you're a worker every single day, whether you're a visitor, and whether you're a resident. I think that experience then ripples into the community about perceptions. I think it ripples into the community about what it was like. And so then you are more likely to go to dinner again in downtown. You're more likely to go to a show. And those experiences are incredibly important. So a couple of things that have happened, and I think they should continue, is, you know, TriMet has hired somewhere above 200 new security folks who you probably have seen around platforms, on buses, on trains. That's super important because they add a layer of security and problem solving for a system that really had a lot of problems a couple of years ago. And we have to restore faith that system works and that you won't experience a bad situation when you're on a bus or a train. Prosper Portland, when I was in City Hall, we had to expand their budget for the broken window fund numerous times, where Prosper would sponsor or pay your bill basically up to $10,000 if your windows got smashed in and you were in Portland. And those small businesses, that is a huge deal. If you think about so many of the small galleries, the pop-ups, et cetera, a $10,000 bill every couple of months is the kind of thing that puts you out of business. And
that's right.
They were getting to the point where insurance was no longer going to be an option because insurance was threatening to cancel folks. And so Prosper stepped up. We need to keep that. Prosper is a very big picture organization, but they also have the ability to affect our most granular, most organic types of Portland-esque businesses who are just trying to their first go at a brick and mortar. And we've got to be able to help that. I think city workers and other companies are continuing to bring employees back to office because there is a world where hybrid is our future, but entirely remote is not working for the city. It's not working for a lot of businesses. And incentivizing and making a good value proposition for employees who are coming downtown, who are going to spend their time there, who are going to work with their teams and go to lunch during the day, I think that also improves. We want to see foot traffic in downtown improve. Foot traffic relates to so many other activities. And downtown, what we've learned about the way Portland was designed decades and decades ago is that, you know, the Pearl District and South Waterfront and other parts of the central city recovered at a higher rate after the pandemic than downtown did. And we credit that in large part to the fact that downtown has fewer residences who are there after 5 o'clock.
People moving around makes it safer.
Exactly. And I think that I've always believed that mixed income neighborhoods were the healthiest neighborhoods. I also believe that mixed use neighborhoods are the healthiest neighborhoods. And that is a future for downtown. A lot of people wanted to say, hey, you just convert all the commercial buildings to residential and that will fix our problem. I can assure you that is not the magic wand. It is part of it, but it is not very, it's not a very simple process, and it's not a process that is going to, I think, work in every situation for Portland, because most of these buildings, it would be more cost effective to tear them down and build residential than it would be to convert.
That statistic always boggles my mind.
It does. And it's also incredibly environmentally impactful, right? Yeah. Tearing down a building to build up a new one just for it, it's not good. And so I think that what we have done is, I know a number of landlords have been approached by the city and by Prosper and by the business chamber for the free rent or severely reduced rent just to get ground level retail up and open. I've been to many of these over the time, and these pop-ups that Mike talks about, they're effective when they're there. They can also be hard to attract. They can be hard to retain. And so we have come a long way in 2 years. I think we still have a long way to go. Downtown is an area that we have spent my entire life investing billions of dollars in where our transportation goes. We've kind of got that system of MAX and transit. We've got our living room at Pioneer Square. We've got all these things that go, and they centralize so much of our culture. I don't want to give up on it. It's right. A big deal to me. Revitalize downtown, Rose City Love, whatever we call it, I'm on board.
Great. Well, I'm going to pivot us here. Over the summer, KBOO surveyed our listeners to find out their priorities for the election. Mainly the answer to this question: what do you want candidates to be talking about as they compete for votes? And there were a number of priorities that emerged, as you might imagine, but the one that actually came up the most frequently was the climate crisis. So I want to put that to you guys. Is this a priority that you share, and how would you shape Portland's approach to the climate crisis going forward? Let's start with Mike.
Yeah, I think this is a great question. It's fundamental. It's important to me as well. I think we spend a lot of time talking about these bigger issues that we've been discussing, the trifecta of homelessness, affordability, and public safety. Again, I think that's all tied as one. You can't affect any of those three without really addressing one and all of them. Climate change, though, really gets to me. We need to make sure that we're looking at our building codes and what we're doing currently to plan for this ongoing climate crisis that we're all dealing with. Portland is going to be a climate refugee place. It's a place that climate refugees are going to come to weather this climate change better. We do know this. So we need to have building codes that allow for densification within the city. We may need to go higher, but more importantly, infilling some of our properties needs to be easier for homeowners to do so. Right now, a lot of our properties that are being used as investment properties are also being bought up by corporations. That's decreasing the supply of available homes for first-time buyers and growing families, because the investment property opportunities have been very lucrative. And so we're seeing less opportunity for homeowners and private people to build on their own properties and do densification in a healthy way. So we need to be looking at our codes to make sure that we're planning for the future.
Yeah. Well, I want to point out one thing in particular, just that the critical energy infrastructure hub is located in District 4, which is your guys' district.
Yep.
And everything that we know about it is that, you know, if the Cascadia subduction zone earthquake does happen, that presents a major hazard to the Linton neighborhood, to Forest Park. I mean, there's a lot of bad things that are going to happen when this earthquake, if and when it does come. But the CEI hub is something, is that a priority of yours, thinking about, 100%. You know, District 4 residents?
Yeah, the group Tank the Tanks has done a really great job of bringing this to the forefront for everyone in Portland to understand the dangers that exist there. Through the campaign trail of listening to the community, which is so important that our elected leaders are doing, because that's where the solutions will come from. I have learned that the critical energy infrastructure has, you know, a third of the tanks there are old, maybe empty. They're outdated, need to be fully decommissioned. I would like to move to make sure that those Zenith Energy and the many companies that are there that hold these tanks, if they're empty and they're decommissioned and they need to go, let's scrap them and let's see that progress happening. We need to do risk bonding so that the people who are providing these energy resources and making money on them are shouldering the risk that is being placed on our city. There's jet fuel for the Port of Portland that's kept at this central, the critical energy infrastructure. We need to move that closer to the places that they need to be used. And we also need to get the fuel and the energy that we're storing for other states like Idaho and Montana and have them store their own fuel so that they're holding the risk of the energy that they need for their community in their state. We shouldn't be holding all of that risk.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Zenith. Eric, I'm going to get to you in a second. The city council followed a real zigzag path to the Zenith agreement. Would you consider trying to overturn it?
It definitely needs to be updated. Overturning it is, it can't go back 100% the other way. So we need to address it and make sure that it's more equitable for the people of Portland and that we're holding Zenith Energy and these energy providers accountable for the risk that they have in our city and where they exist.
Okay, pivoting over to Eric, we can start broad here. Mm-hmm. There's a priority among our listeners to have city council and city government address the climate crisis. Your thoughts on what Portland needs to do?
Yeah, I think, for me, the way that I want Portland to make sure that we're a sustainable city, a city that is on the forefront of our, climate resiliency, climate protection preparedness, is that I agree that a city is the right place to be dense, meaning that our impact is up instead of out across land that should be protected. I'm very much in favor of that. As the person running to represent the central city, I'm in favor of doubling the height limits in the central city. I'm in favor of making it easier and more affordable to develop larger properties so that we can get folks housed, that we can be a community where a family wage job can actually live. And I know that those are not the normal community or climate talking points, but I think they're very important for a city to take on, because if you're talking about climate protection resiliency and you're not talking about, and you're a city and you're not talking about how you're going to be a dense city, then I think you're missing the mark in a lot of ways. We've come a long way over the last 20 years from a building codes perspective, from a procurement perspective, transitions away from certain types of fuels to electric. That is important stuff, but it can be complemented by building infrastructure and codes that meet the mark and also are complementary to the smaller actions like transitioning away from certain fuels. Those together are a huge impact. Getting into CEI and getting into what it affects our district, huge concern, huge area. And I'll just note, I've spent, and most people know, I've spent 17 years in the Oregon National Guard. In that role, I have been a person who has responded to emergencies. In fact, when Oregon stood up its first chemical mass casualty response force with the National Guard, I was the first operations officer for that. So the CEI hub has been on my radar for quite some time. Mm-hmm. What I am looking at is today we need to do everything we can to make that hub safer in how things are stored and safer in how things are transported to and from. And tomorrow we need to be doing everything we can to find it a new home.
Mm-hmm.
Being on the river in a liquefaction zone and mm-hmm. near neighborhoods is not just concerning for District 4. It is concerning for folks downriver in St. Helens, Warren, and Scappoose. It is concerning for people across on the Bluff in North Portland in District 2.
I mean, if it goes, it goes all the way out to Columbia as well.
It goes, right. And so that changes shipping for an entire region. That changes access to water and access to fish and access to everything ecological across an entire region. And if fire is involved, we will have the largest urban forest fire in the country because, as you know, Forest Park comes right on down into downtown Portland. And so we have some real concerns there. And so that's why today I talk about safer and tomorrow I talk about relocating. Mike's right. There is probably no group in this election who has made a better advocacy campaign than the Linton community and the Tank the Tanks community. They've made it very clear to all of the candidates about the seriousness that they take this situation, and I hear them.
Mm-hmm. Kudos to them.
And because I asked Mike, for you as well, the Zenith Agreement, something that, you know, that they're reneging on the promises made to the public, for one thing, would you consider trying to overturn or revisit the city's relationship with Zenith?
Yeah, it's not top of mind for me. Mm-hmm. I have not asked the five sitting city councilors and mayor why they made the decisions they made. And so I'm open to it, but it's not an area that I'm leading on right now. I think, you know, I saw a presentation recently is that the community is looking for a first and a second vote on this, meaning they're looking for a leader on those topics. And I understand that. For the things that I'm running for right now, undoing the Zenith plan is not top of mind for me. It doesn't mean I'm closed off to it, but it's just not top of mind for me today.
Okay. Did you want to add something, Mike, please?
Yeah, just, you know, when we talk about Zenith and we talk about the liquefaction, we're really, our minds are about this subduction quake that is looming that we all really hear. And, you know, anytime I hear people or we talk about the liquefaction, my mind immediately comes back to like some of our building stuff and the safety all around of, we have so many URMs in this city. Most of them are residential units. URMs are unreinforced masonry buildings, turn of the century construction, brick and mortar, big, like old growth timber beams inside. They're beautiful, warm, gorgeous, creative buildings in Portland, but they're death traps because for developers and builders that own them, it can be millions of dollars to retrofit these buildings to make them earthquake safe. And, you know, again, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole, but anytime I have a discussion about the critical energy infrastructure and the concerns that are there because of the pending quake that may or may not come in our foreseeable future.
Knock on wood, just in case, but go on.
I really, really am concerned about the life safety component of our neighbors who live in these residential units that are just frankly not safe.
Yeah.
And on city council, we need people who are really focused on what's important for the people of Portland, not for the corporations, not for always. I mean, budget and bottom line is always important because we have to have a balanced budget, but we really need to make sure that our city is safe for the people who live in it.
I do want to add that Commissioner Myron at the county is planning to, and she shared with me her plan for the bonding.
So
she's a supporter of mine and shared that plan. I think that she's on the right track. So keep your eyes open for that, I think, in November.
Yeah.
That's the risk bonding.
Yep.
Yeah. One quick note. We have just a couple minutes left here, but we did have a caller ask when we were talking about the CEI hub about decommissioning old petroleum storage sites. Have you considered replacing spaces such as these with Douglas fir trees or other native trees? Are trees and greenery on the mind? For either of you.
Well, they are now, caller. I mean, I think when I say tomorrow we move the site, that doesn't mean just leave a brownfield forever. Yeah. Right. It means that, and you know, we can do really great stuff. I went to the University of Portland, and if you're familiar with their river campus over the last 20 years, a complete transformation. But until this call came in, did I envision Doug Furs on it? No, that hadn't been something, but certainly open to it. Yes.
Okay. Mike, thoughts about this?
That whole area is going to be a reclamation zone for quite a long time, and much of the Portland Harbor already is. Mm-hmm. I think that this caller makes a very good point because using natural landscape is a way to help increase remediation of property and land. So it is still private land. We can't just put trees anywhere. But as they start removing tanks and it starts turning into a waterfront zone again, mm-hmm. absolutely should turn into green space for the community.
Yeah. Well, thank you both so much for being here. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to our listeners about this election. It's a big one.
Yeah, thank you.
Folks at home, you have been listening to Running on Air, produced at KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon. I've been here with Mike DiNapoli and Eric Zimmerman from District 4. You can find all the episodes of Running on Air on the KBOO website. That's kboo.fm/runningonair. Episodes are also available wherever you get your podcasts. Our engineer is Ender Black. Thank you, Ender. Tune in to the next episode of Running on Air. It will be tomorrow, Friday, September 27th at 7 p.m. with mayoral candidate Keith Wilson. I have been your host, Althea Billings. Thanks for listening.